Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 37 degrees with intermittent light rain and thundershowers this morning. It's Monday, November 7th, 2011. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. Although many people indoors felt the bump, there was no tsunami advisory in the wake of the small earthquake which rattled Sitka this weekend. The West Coast and Alaska Tsunami Warning Center in Palmer reports that an earthquake with a preliminary magnitude of 4.7 struck about 45 miles southwest of Sitka at 12:45 p.m. Saturday afternoon. The epicenter was 12 miles below the surface. Many people in Sitka felt the quake. Al Stevens at the Sitka Fire Hall says he called the Palmer Center right away, but was informed that the tremor did not present a tsunami hazard. Whether or not you felt the quake depended on where you were and what you were doing. Participants in the Occupy Sitka demonstration had regrouped Saturday at noon after an evening protest earlier in the week ended early. About 25 Sitkans stood on the corner of Catlian Street. Others walked Lincoln Street. No one appeared to notice any ground movement. When they learned later that a 4.7 magnitude earthquake struck during the protest, one participant quipped, "That was Wall Street cracking." For the generation of Alaska Native elders who grew up in remote villages throughout the state, the desire to die at home runs deep. But caring for elders in such rugged places is a complicated task. For many, aging in place is not an option. Reporter and former KCAW news intern Shalise Haas traveled to Eagle on the Upper Yukon this summer to find out what's at stake for Native elders in need of long-term care.
One step down. Yeah. Now a turn.
Oh. Matthew Malcolm holds tightly to the arm of his caretaker and friend, Don Thibodeau, right, as they enter the white clapboard building that houses Eagle's History Museum.
They said in 1930 they had a population of 54 people here.
That's a lot, so.
You were one of them. Oh. You were 5 years old then.
Matthew is now 85 years old. He's one of the last Han Guchin Athabascan elders of Eagle. He grew up here, fishing salmon in the summer, hunting moose and caribou in the fall, and taking dog teams out trapping in the winter. And he always thought he'd die here. But now Matthew is blind and has Alzheimer's disease. He lives at the Denali Center, a long-term care facility in Fairbanks, 370 miles from Eagle. He's only here for a short visit, just 4 days.
He sure wants to be here, even though he's got that Alzheimer's.
Angela Harper is Matthew's sister.
And everybody is happy to see him come back. But I won't want him to come back to live here. To tell you the truth, there is no one to take good care of him.
Eagle is a serene and beautiful place, but it's also a hard place. The road is impassable 9 months of the year. Winter temperatures often reach 40 below. And the only medical care for hundreds of miles is housed in a 3-room, 40-foot trailer. Cindy Nation is the director of the home care program at Tanana Chiefs Conference, the agency that provides health care to Eagle and to villages from Allakaket to Northway.
Can you imagine going into a home where the person has incontinence issues? You don't have running water. You have to clean them up. You have to clean their home up. That means heating water, hauling water, sometimes building the fire in the stove to do those kinds of things.
Such challenges are just part of what makes providing home care difficult in remote villages. Young people continue to leave in search of work, and most state and federal funding for home care services has dried up.
We don't have a hospital. We don't have a doctor. We don't have nurses.
Donna Westfall is a volunteer caretaker.
We have a clinic in the village that has a health practitioner there. We really have nothing here. Just someone like me who's willing to help out and take care of people.
In 1998, Tanana Chiefs had 68 trained nursing aides on their payroll. Today, they have none. Cindy Nation says that elders who stay in the village often give up life-extending medical care. But those who leave also make a painful choice.
Our elders want to die at home. An elder told me that their spirits don't rest unless they're able to die at home.
I wish we could do that for Matthew. I wish there was a way to make that work for him.
Donna and her husband used to care for Matthew Malcolm before he moved to the Denali Center.
I mean, I know him very well, and I know that it means the world to him. I mean, it's all he wants to do, is to come home.
On this Sunday night, nearly all of Eagle's 150 residents are crowded into the community hall. It's potluck dinner, and people fill their plates with potato salad, mousse spaghetti, and salmon bake. Donna and her husband, Barry, sit down beside Matthew at a long table.
You remember Donna, don't you?
Donna.
Kentucky girl, Donna.
Oh, Kentucky.
We're buddies, huh?
In just a few days, Matthew will make the long trip back to Fairbanks. He'll return to his room in the dementia wing at Denali Center, far from the Yukon River and his favorite fishing spot. But tonight, Matthew is making the most of this visit, surrounded by the people he knows best in a place that is both familiar and comforting.
Well, it's so good to see you again, Matthew. It really is. I'm glad you made it to Eagle.
I'll let you know if I catch you the fish.
All right.
Okay.
For AK, I'm Shalice Haas.
Reporter Shalice Haas served as KCAW's news intern in 2009, where she reported on a number of issues related to aging and healthcare. She produced this story with support from the MetLife Foundation Journalism in Aging Fellowship, a program of New America Media and the Gerontological Society of America. Citizens in Petersburg had a lot of questions for the state's Office of Children's Services this week. Local educators, foster parents, law enforcement, and mental health service providers are concerned about the department's regional call center in Juneau. It's a new way of reporting cases of child abuse or endangerment, and critics say it's not working. Joe Bicknicki reports.
Dozens packed the city council chambers to hear from four OCS staffers about recent changes in the state agency's services in Petersburg. Sharon Fleming, a regional manager for OCS, started off the meeting.
First of all, I just want to state that at this point, OCS has absolutely no intention of closing the Petersburg office at all. So I just wanted to put that out there, that that is not why we're here. We're here to talk about the regionalized intake process, which officially started September 1st for Petersburg.
Regional intake means reports of concern over a child's welfare now go through a regional call center in Juneau. The call center documents a report and then contacts social workers in the communities for a follow-up. Leah Van Kirk, OCS Regional Intake Supervisor, explained the reasons for the new system.
The regional intake is a statewide mandate, and I'll be honest with you, I think that there are pros and cons to regional intake. Some of the positive things that I think that the state has identified and some communities have expressed is that generally speaking, there's somebody who's available to get a hold of to make reports to most of the time.
Numerous audience members reported having problems with the 800 call-in number. Petersburg Mental Health's Kim Kilkenny said she's ended up leaving messages on the system and couldn't report cases.
So I get a call back the next day, and they're in Anchorage saying, why are you calling Anchorage? And I don't know. I'm calling the 800 number, and the intake person's telling you to call me. So I'm not even able to give a report.
Okay.
So I don't understand where the problem is with that.
Others in the audience said callbacks didn't happen until the next day and said 24 hours was too long to wait in some emergency cases. Barb Marifern questioned the need for routing calls through Juneau.
It just seems very odd that you would, if you have someone full-time in Petersburg, why couldn't the public talk to that person to cut down on miscommunication? I mean, to tell someone in Juneau and then have it relayed back when you have the caseworker right here. I mean, miscommunication happens so easy, and it just seems like it's muddling.
Petersburg's social worker position is currently vacant, and that has added to local frustration. In 2009, the agency considered moving Petersburg's two OCS employees to Juneau and ultimately decided to leave one staffer in town after community members protested. OCS has been working to fill the vacant job, which also covers Wrangell and Cake, and an employee in Sitka is making trips to Petersburg to cover cases in the meantime. The OCS representative said there are other unfilled jobs in the region, three in Juneau and one in Craig, and the agency's Van Kirk recognized the importance of having a social worker in town.
Yes, it is important that you have a worker here in your community that you can go to, and that's your resource. And they are in the community. And if there's an emergency and you need to go to that worker, then you go to that worker and the worker is going to respond. You don't have to call Juneau to make a report.
Concern over staffing levels in the region was a take-home message for Republican Representative Peggy Wilson of Wrangell, who listened into the meeting by telephone.
There really should be another person because too much is being demanded of each of those people, and so people don't want to do it because it's just too much. And it might be because the staffing just isn't going to be good enough, and that's one reason why you can't fill the position.
Wilson says she'd look into whether another position would be possible, and others at the meeting said they'd like to lobby the governor and state legislature to fund more social workers in the state. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
State Representative Peggy Wilson has filed a letter of intent to run in next year's legislative race. Which race that will be, she's not saying. Redistricting has lumped the Wrangell Republicans district in with Ketchikan. Incumbent Representative Kyle Johansson, a fellow Republican from Ketchikan, has filed for the District 33 seat. So has Ketchikan resident Patty Mackey, the director of the Ketchikan Visitors Bureau, and Ketchikan resident Dave Scott, an aide to Democratic State Senator Donnie Olson of Nome. Wilson could also file for Senate in District Q, but would face stiff competition. Redistricting put two incumbent legislators, Republican Bert Stedman of Sitka and Democrat Albert Kukesh of Angoon, into that district, and both have filed as candidates. So in weather forecast today for Sitka and PA, calls for rain showers and isolated thunderstorms, highs around 43, southwest winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, rain likely, highs around 41, southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka.